Welcome back to The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcast. In podcast 478, so I had a lot of conversations this weekend with friends about things going on in media, and it triggered a whole bunch of thoughts on media. And so that's what we're going to talk about in podcast 478. But before we get into that, one of the biggest challenges for growing businesses is how to show people how much they are appreciated as clients. And if you are in business, because I am, and this is what you do, you socialize. You take them to lunch or dinner, or they take you to lunch or dinner. You can arrange some kind of fishing trip. You can send baubles with your company name on it to people. Or what I like to refer to as the Minnesota Classic, which is a boat trip on a lake. Or you can try something new. So I'm going to recommend something that's new and really works. It's different. It's social. It's memorable. Here's what happens. You socialize and bond with your clients engaged in creating something unique and fun. There's no pressure. And it's a really great way to get to know your clients at Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park. Let me explain what this is and how it works. First of all, Brush Studio events are held in a relaxed social setting. An artist guides the team or the group of people that you have as clients through the featured painting step by step. They don't have to have experience. It's not about that. It's about having fun. And your clients are going to be amazed at what they're able to create. Brush Studio events aren't about painting, but about socializing and working together. There's room for 55 people plus catering from Crave in the West End. So I guarantee you it's going to be an enjoyable evening. Brush Studio features over 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. They will work with you to make sure that it's a great event for your clients. It's a fun, sophisticated way to create a new bonding experience for your clients that they will never forget, and you'll never forget it, and they're going to love you for it. Because here's the thing, you don't have to do any painting unless you want to. You can spend time socializing and talking to your people, your clients, while they enjoy themselves. So here's what you do. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page, or visit brushstudio.net. They are event ninjas. It will be a great event for you and your clients. You can reach out to Brush Studio at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700, Brush Studio. All right, I'm entitling this podcast On Media because the original plan for this podcast was that I was going to talk about media. And now I don't remember why I wanted to talk about media. So, I kind of do. And I'm going to give you a little background view of my process, because I think that's one of the cool things that you can do in podcasting that you could never do on the radio, is to let people sort of know what your process is. So very seldom do I sit down and just talk. And I've done a couple of podcasts where I talk about this. The Gonzo Talk podcast, I kind of explained that that was a departure, that most of the time these podcasts are increasingly produced, and that's okay. Because I think what's happening is I'm progressing in terms of realizing what I want to say, and I want to take the time to say it properly. But sometimes that just doesn't work. And this podcast has been started and stopped several times. And there's a lot of themes running through my mind and a lot of triggers running through my mind for this podcast. And so it's called On Media, and I'll probably talk about media because I made a ton of notes about media, but I don't really care. I don't really care about media right now. Maybe I will, and maybe I won't. And there's a couple of reasons. A lot of the media piece was obviously political, because the triggers for wanting to talk about media were political, because I got up on Sunday morning. Well, it wasn't Sunday morning. It was 4 p.m. because that's when I got up, because I'm on the all-night schedule again. And so it's about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I've done other stuff today. But the first thing I did when I got up is I made my coffee, and I sat there, and I went online. And, you know, usually on the weekend I don't do that. I went online, and I loaded up all my things that I look at and just sort of began the process of scanning to see what the latest news is. And I use the term news lightly, and immediately it depressed it. It started to depress me. Yeah, there's the toilet flushing next door. Anyway, it immediately started to depress me because this political stuff going on is causes me. I'm very vexed by it, and I think that was one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about media. But I wanted the media talk to be fun because it's Monday morning for people. I wanted to kind of just kind of have a fun Monday morning conversation about media and not get into all this negative stuff. Then the other part of it is that people keep asking me what's going on. Everybody I know keeps saying, what's with this Trump thing and what's going on and what's happening with what's going on in the world and why are people acting so strange and what's all this terrible stuff going on? And it's just, and then I guess that because I do what I do, I'm kind of trying to explain it as though I could explain it. And then later, so tonight when I started working on the podcast, I kind of meandered my way into, as I'm writing and looking at stuff, some explanation for what is going on. And I went through and I wrote the whole podcast up and I basically, you know, narrated the podcast. When I got to the end, I was like, this sucks. This is, you know, it's way too heavy for a Monday and maybe for any day. And it's more of this this dark, this is what's going on. And if we don't do this and if we don't do that, and it's just, I'm so tired of that. Do I have ideas about what's going on? Yeah. And what's going on with media? You know, and I went through this whole thing, well, I'm going to define media. I was like, I better define media so people understand what I'm talking about. And I looked it up and the definition is interesting because it doesn't say anything about Fair and Balanced or MSNBC or what it's supposed to be or anything else. It's basically media is a method of conveyance or a method of expression. It's literally a vein or a pipe. And as such, it knows nothing about what it's conveying. It's conveying whatever is put in the pipeline. And the person who is putting stuff in the pipeline, you know, his or her biases are going to be conveyed to the rest of the, you know, to whoever happens to open that pipeline and pour out what is in it. And so there's no explanation in the definition of the word media that says that anybody has to be fair and balanced. And I think part of what has happened today is has to do with our society. It has to do with the changes in our society. And the media is just as affected by those changes as everything else. And the biggest change in society in the last 40 years is that we are transitioning from an industrial-based world to a technology-based world in a big way. And some people call it the fourth industrial revolution. Some people say that you shouldn't call it that because that's not what it is. I can tell you this, that the world that I grew up in is no longer the world. The world that I grew up in was a world of mass media and mass marketing. And it was, you know, it was highly technological, depending on what you looked at compared to the 1920s and the 1910s and the 1860s or whatever. But compared to today, the world I grew up in is a relic. And everything, every rule regarding media and every rule that we have come to know, you know, in the last 40 years has been upended by the internet and the integrated circuit and the tools that have been created and the proliferation of means of communications throughout. So the expectation that Uncle Walter will tell you the truth on CBS or that Ed Murrow, you know, the people aspire to be Ed Murrow. Most people don't even know who Ed Murrow is, the iconic and original CBS newsman who did the documentary Harvest of Shame and you know, reported from the roof of the hotel in London during the Blitz and on and on and on. That person, that iconic image of a reporter in a trench coat uncovering the news doesn't exist anymore. And what is left is, you know, people who go out and advocate for a point of view, people who go out and fire up their tribe, people who go out and tell their truth, people who go out and willingly lend their name and their, quote, audience to a cause or an individual. And that's what you have today. You have people who have a sort of patina of objectivity, who are out campaigning for candidates for president. And it's getting crazier and crazier and crazier. And people say, well, it's the media's fault that this stuff is happening. It's all the media's fault. The media is doing this. And I don't think the media is doing this. And this was the fourth or fifth thought that I had that I wanted to express in a podcast. And I'm moving a little fast, but that's kind of the next thing is, why is this stuff happening? Why are people doing this? And the answer is, there's so many outlets. There are so many places for information. And so many of them get so many views that the difference between, you can be in the valley, you know, it's conceivable that I could have my little podcast and it could go from being my little podcast to literally being having millions of listens because of something that happened in a very short period of time. And then I would be at the peak of the mountain. And when people get to the top of the peak of the mountain, they start trying to figure out how to stay there. And so it's a very interesting when people try to stay at the top, it's all about survival. It's all about clicks and views and survival. And in one of the iterations of this podcast, I talk about, I went to the supermarket tonight to buy some coffee. And I was just walking around because I knew I was going to do this podcast. And, you know, in the mass marketing world, the supermarket used to be the paradigm because the supermarket was the place where all of these brands were displayed. There's four or five brands for everything, four or five brands of floor cleaner, four or five brands of tuna, four or five brands of whatever. And, you know, this is the horn of plenty of American society, which, you know, I've talked about in podcasts where I talked about those train promotional movies on YouTube that I did a whole podcast about that I just love, that talk about the horn of plenty of American society and how trains conveyed, it was a form of media, conveyed all of these products to the stores so mom and dad could buy the steak and the tuna and the milk and all that stuff, right? And so the supermarket was really the paradigm of this sort of high point of mass marketing circa 1955 or 1960 in America. And after that, really the paradigm, the image of this perfect society kind of started to decay. And it continued to decay all the way through the 60s and 70s until this sort of new idea about marketing and communications emerged, namely the internet and the integrated circuit and the smartphone and first the computer, the desktop top computer, then the portable, then the smartphone, then the yada yada, and whatever happens next, scalp connects, I don't know, robots, to become the iconic image of a specific point in time. But the supermarket was the iconic image of that mass marketing time that really is rooted in the early 50s in America. And so the supermarket is a good paradigm for us to work with in terms of thinking about media. Because back in the day, most major markets had four or five radio stations. They had six or seven newspapers, morning and afternoon, and they had two or three TV stations. And I'm talking about Chicago and Boston and New York and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. If you lived in Tuscaloosa or in Minneapolis, St. Paul, you might have one radio station and you might have one TV station at a certain point in the 40s and 50s. But as time went on, it proliferated and it was like a supermarket. So you went into the supermarket and you chose between five brands of dish soap. Well, the internet is like a giant supermarket, except it's like the Matrix where he says, I need an automatic weapon. I need guns, lots of them. And then every gun on the planet comes into this to the view in the Matrix. Well, that's what the internet is like. It's a supermarket that has room for every single product. And the whole point of the supermarket was that supermarkets chose which products to sell because they couldn't sell all of them. So they sold the leading products. And there was four or five of them generally in every single product category. Same with media. That's mass media. But the internet is an infinite selection of things to watch and listen to, all essentially the same to your subconscious, all available all the time. So someone who makes a video about a cat can have 1 million views, which is more per quarter hour, which is more in any given quarter hour than CNN has, believe it or not. Or a couple of guys in the basement of their house can do a TV show that has millions of subscribers, which is more than most of the shows on MSNBC. And there are an endless selection of these. And at any time, any one of these shows can become number one, literally. They can become the most viewed thing on the internet. They can become the most viewed thing in society, right? And the reason I'm mentioning this is that in order to stay on top, in order to be something, you essentially are talking to your subscribers, your tribe, and your tribe slowly adds people and becomes a bigger and bigger tribe. And so it's very popular in media circles to build up your point of view by advocating for something, advocating for a person, for a view. And so the idea of objective, of balanced, of journalist goes right out the window. Even Vice News, which presents itself as news and presents itself as journalism, has a point of view, right? So it doesn't matter. Everybody has a point of view. And what we have is a situation where everyone is advocating for a position. Now, I'm going to talk shortly about how those positions make it exceedingly difficult to figure out what's going on, because I think that's the core of where I'm going with this. And I'm kind of figuring it out as I go, but I think that's the core of where I'm going with this, is that, that we're getting very bad information because of the effect of all of this point of view journalism, so to speak, and all of this really shocking association with actors and politicians, you know, where commerce meets governance, for lack of a better term. One of the things that I do to cope, and I'll probably talk more about it, is just I do a lot of exercising, and it's primarily yoga. And I do all kinds of yoga, and I do yoga in crowded rooms, which are usually really hot, and you sweat a lot. And I have learned that you can get very dehydrated very quickly, even if you drink a lot of water. And a lot of times when you drink water before you exercise, the water takes a long time to get into your muscles and to get you hydrated. And so a lot of times people are sore, and I used to think that soreness went with the territory until I learned about Hydrus. Hydrus transformed my yoga practice. It will transform whatever you do, whether it's cycling, CrossFit, lift, or do competitive sports, because what it is it's a high-performance beverage that uses exclusive nanosome technology to deliver critical electrolytes with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. And there's no sugar, so it gets into your muscles without sugar. And almost everyone that I have known that has used Hydrus is amazed by what it does. What it does is it helps you go to your edge, which is where you grow. It's where you learn to do better. It's where you understand more about what it is that you're doing. And it's where anybody that does any fitness stuff wants to be most of the time. If you want to know more about Hydrus and join the performance hydration revolution, visit hydrusperformance.com. That's hydrusperformance.com. There's lots of content on the site that explains what it is and how it works, lots of stories and information about the studies and everything else, and you can order it and check it out. And let me know if you do what it does for you, because I love hearing the stories about Hydrus, and I'll share some of them with subscribers to the Bob Davis Podcast as well. So thanks, Hydrus, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So getting back to the genesis of this podcast mess that I'm currently engaged in. It was supposed to be a light discussion of the history of media for your Monday. I know that people don't necessarily listen to this on Monday, so it could be your Wednesday, but whatever. It's my Monday, and I was going to do some kind of a light thing, and whatever. One of the triggers for that was really, you know, I am disturbed. And have been disturbed for a while at how many of my colleagues in talk radio are willing to tell you who to vote for. And that's the easiest and the lightest way that I can say it. that they are willing to tell their audience, this is who you should vote for, and this is what you should believe in, and this is what you should be. And generally, people support that I'm part of this tribe. I believe this. Therefore, this guy is my representative of what I believe. And that, I think, that's the core of this. That's is that okay with you? It's not okay with me. It's disturbing to me because one of the things that I always endeavored to do, even when I was screaming and yelling and pounding, was to kind of poke fun at all that and to try to give people information about things. And I went through that whole phase of advocacy in talk radio where I felt that I had to advocate for a certain position. And I stopped doing it, not because I don't have the advocacy anymore or not because I don't believe anymore this or that, but because my political views have evolved, but also my views about what media is and what it's supposed to be have evolved over time. And what I think is really going on, what I think is being missed by it's not being missed by the candidates, but it's being missed by the analysts and it's being missed by the people, is that we're first of all, we're awash in persuasion. We're awash in particularly symbolic persuasion. There are persuasive symbols everywhere, or things that are designed to persuade you, whether it's a logo, a type of dress, an attitude. Everything is designed to make a statement or to persuade you of something. And I'm talking about every screen that you see that's animated in some way, shape, or form. If you want to go out for a BLT salad on a Sunday night, there are 15 televisions that surround you that are, even when they're off, they are playing these images. I pulled up, I was leaving yoga tonight, and I pulled up in front of a bar, and I looked in, and it was just filled with televisions. And on one of the screens were two people making love, and scantily clad. I don't know what show that was. On another screen, it was a sport contest, and on another screen, it was a talking head. So people are being persuaded even when they don't hear it. They're being persuaded. They're being persuaded in music videos. They're being persuaded in music. They're being persuaded in political theater and politics as media. And that's really what's going on in our society right now. We're not responding to issues. I don't even know if we're responding to personalities. We're responding to politics as a form of media, as a method of conveyance. And that's really disturbing to me. And so if you said what's really going on, I would say that is something that needs to be looked at. And I don't mean that laws need to be passed. I just mean that it's something to think about and something to study. And part of my purpose is to give you something to think about rather than tell you what you should think or tell you what you should be. I don't know if I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, because honestly, I can't remember what I said, and you probably can't either, given the fact that I'm so fractalized tonight or today or whatever. But I said something about liberal and conservative on the radio show, and people responded to that on Facebook. I can't even look at Twitter when I get up in the morning and start my process. I can't even look at Drudge when I get up in the morning and start my process. I have other sources that I look for, news aggregators, to just find stories, because I can't look at what people are posting on Twitter. It's so partisan and it's so demanding of a certain point of view that it's overwhelming. I can't, it affects me in such a negative way that I'll shut down. And I love politics, but we're not talking about politics anymore. We're not vetting paths of policy to issues, to solve problems. We're responding to things that are done as theater. We're responding to a small protest to block a street that gets them on television. We're responding to, that kind of thing. And I'm not even judging people that do that, because I know there are people that do that. I'm just saying this is what we are responding to. My friend will send me an email or a text from Phoenix saying, boy, you should be down here to see this nonsense. And I mean, I've seen it, and it's usually a handful of people. It's not what it looks like on YouTube. And even if it's 1,000 people, it looks like 100,000 if it's a screenshot from the location or from a helicopter or something. And so this is what we're responding to. We're not responding to, well, what is it exactly that this guy is for or against, or what is it exactly that this is, what is going on here? And so people then say to me, what's going on? Why is this happening? Why is this so, where are we headed? What's going to happen? And of course, I did a podcast last week about all of the predictions of the end of the world and the end times and, you know, the planet Nibiru or whatever it's called that's coming in and it's causing all this stuff, or it's the eclipse, or it's the this or that, or there's all these existential reasons for why this is happening. And I thought to myself tonight while I was eating, or today, or whatever time of the day it was, because I'm all turned around because I'm doing this all-night thing, and I'm coming, my schedule is actually spinning around to become a daytime schedule again, so it's a lot, I mean, it's a mess. I'm a mess. So I was thinking about this today, and I thought, you know what is going on? And this gets back to the conversation that I had with friends, you know, why doesn't the newspaper report on this, that, or the other thing? And I said they don't see it. You know what's going on is, and this is my opinion, okay? But I think what's going on is that we're at a point where there is... Well, let me just back up. What's going on is this, and especially in the quote-unquote conservative circles, and, you know, you'll hear this a lot, socialists and liberals, and they want this, and we conservatives and Republicans and Democrats want that, and we want this, and we want it this way, and they're wrong, and they're dumb, and they're misdirected, and they're confused, and they're wrong. You know, it's about making them wrong. And it's about making you right because you're on the right side, right? And everything's sides, and everything's that we need to do this and we need to do that, and those people this and these people that, and this one agrees with me, so I like him, and all of that. And I think the reason for it is the fact is, you know, you hear people talking about socialism, and the fact is that America has been really one form of socialist for 70 years. So everybody alive today pretty much has grown up in a socialist environment. That is not a world where the government controls the means of production, because that's communism, or owns all the property, because that's communism. But a world in which institutions have been developed to intervene to address some perceived or perhaps real ill, because we don't have the patience to wait for things to resolve. And over the last 70 years, we've reached a point where most people find government somewhere in their life, and either the positive elements of government in the sense that they receive some benefit, or the negative, artifacts of government, which are usually regulations that kill off dreams and stop people from starting businesses, or the results of poor education, or the results of very real and dangerous, missteps by government, whether it is the Flint water thing, which regardless of how it happened, it happened, or the EPA mine blowout, or people who are upset because they're being beaten by police, or people who are upset because, or companies that are upset because they're being asked to unlock devices so that the government can read people's email and see their texts, so that you can't protect your personal information, which is your property. People who are upset because the government is nationalizing, literally, great tracts of land which used to be open range, and on and on and on. So we're living at a time when the people who are juiced in to what is going on, the people who are, and that's kind of a bad term, but it's a gangster term, going back to Chicago, that says that the people who are part of the public-private partnerships and the unelected councils and the universities and the government structure, who are handsomely compensated to ply their trade are different from the people who are struggling to start small businesses, or people who are laborers who don't have the benefit of that. And I think what's happened is that there is simply too much government. And in the process of trying to figure out how to do this podcast, I looked up the definition of enlightenment. And honestly, now I don't even know why I looked up the history or the definition of the word enlightenment and the enlightenment itself, but it shocked me because the definition of the word enlightenment is the state of having knowledge or understanding, the act of giving someone knowledge or understanding. In other words, enlighten me as to ... why you feel this or why you feel that. And for all of the talk about tradition and religion in the formation of the American Republic today, which, by the way, is a whole set of truth on its own, that, you know, the people that started the American Republic were following the footsteps of Christ. You know, the age that spawned the American Revolution that resulted in the American Republic today, or the American Socialist Republic today, depending on what you think about it, was called the Age of Enlightenment. And this will shock you. The Enlightenment is defined as a movement of the 18th century that stressed the belief that science and logic give people more knowledge and understanding than tradition and religion. Let me give you an example of this word tradition. We just heard a whole tantrum by Republicans over the nomination of a Supreme Court justice during an election year. And the reason that they offered for not nominating a justice during an election year was the tradition of not nominating justices during an election year going back 80 years. That was the reason that Republicans offered. When the Republicans claimed to be for the restoration of the result of the movement called the Enlightenment, that believed that science and logic give people more knowledge and understanding than tradition and religion. Now, this isn't an attack on Republicans. What it is it's an explanation of how our country and how the people in this country have become so confused because the words don't mean what they used to mean, because we don't use logic and we don't use science anymore. And we don't use facts anymore because we don't know what the facts are anymore. We use what has replaced logic and science is belief and faith. And what has replaced facts are symbols and icons of persuasion. So we're living in an age when the federal and state governments have grown to be a substantial part of our economic and social and political world. The size and the scope and the power of government, state, federal, and local have continued to increase. There is now a G, which represents government, in every equation. You have these public-private partnerships, which are controlled by unelected councils and bureaucrats, which control the money, develop the cities, dominate industry and commerce, and even police our streets in some cases. And the fact is that elected, quote-unquote, leaders really have no say over these monolithic institutions, and it's rarely noticed, just as it was rarely noticed during the era of the gangsters in places like Chicago, where you had mayors like Big Bill Thompson, who ruled only in name. The real leader of Chicago, the mayor of Chicago, as it were, was the gangster. It was the gang co-op. It was the gang cabal, whether it was Al Capone or John Notorio or Deion O'Banion or whatever. And really, the elected officials didn't do anything. Well, today, elected officials really are not. They can only influence these unelected boards and councils and public-private partnerships and so forth. That's where the real power is. It has become legal corruption, really. And as I think, and as government power has increased, we have paid the costs, whether it's higher taxes or stifled creativity or having our dreams broken by regulation and on it goes. You know, why does no one report on this? Is because we've become blinded to it. We have accepted it because we have been raised in it. And getting it back. Oh, that's a tough one because I don't know the answer to that. And I don't even, that's another podcast. How do we get it back is another podcast. But I think that's what's happened. And I think people are very angry and frustrated and they're angst filled and they don't have an explanation for it because they don't have the words anymore, because they don't have the facts anymore. And everywhere they turn, they find people trying to persuade them. So where, I guess what I would say is this, and I'll close with this. Where does the discernment come from? Where do you get the ability to say, this is what makes sense or this doesn't make sense? How dare you, Bob Davis, tell us that there's too much government and that's what's causing this? Well, I mean, it's my perspective based on what I have read. That's why you can... You can say, I don't agree with that. That's not what the problem is. But where's the discernment come from? And I think it starts with reading, and not reading online, but reading a book. And I think it starts with the types of books that we read. And I think it starts with reading history and try to find the oldest books you can find on history. It starts with reading about periods of time, and you develop the discernment of what is good to read over time. You develop the discernment of why is Hayek better to read than the People's History of the United States? Why is von Mises better to read than Keynes? This is something that you develop the discernment after you've read for a while. And most of us don't read that much. Most of us read stuff online. Most of us watch television. Most of us don't actually read books, because it takes a long time and it's a slow assimilation of information. But that's the beginning of the discernment. And I think it's understanding that science and reason and facts and logic are the keys to beginning to understand this. I don't pretend to be the most logical person on the planet, but I can tell you something is wrong and it's probably not some planet that's coming into our solar system. It's probably that there's too much government because it seems to be everywhere. And what I'm noticing is that people that I see it because I don't have a dog in the fight. I see what is happening and I see people upset about things that government is doing. The people in Flint, Michigan are upset because of what happened to their water. Now, they can blame it on the governor of Michigan if they want. Is that the reason? Well, a list of facts should be able to determine that. The people in Black Lives Matter are upset going back to Ferguson because the police supposedly killed someone or have continued to kill people that they feel are of one race. It doesn't matter if it's true or not, but it's a government action that has caused that. The people out west are upset because the government is taking land, and on it goes. And it's... What's happened is people can't define it because they just feel it now, because we're living in an age of feeling. And we're living in an age of feelings being instantly communicated and to millions of people. So if I see a video of a Black Lives Matter protest on Facebook, I have an immediate emotional reaction. I'm not reading about it. I'm watching a video of it. And then when I scroll up, I see a video of a cat, and a dog, having a good time together. And then I scroll up and I see a sporting event. And then I scroll up and I see a funny video about some guy selling cars. See what I'm saying? You're constantly being exposed to completely different stimuli that is designed to persuade in some way, shape, or form. How do you turn it off? You revert to the old ways, but you can't ignore it and you can't block yourself off from the world as it is. You have to begin to develop tools for coping. And there isn't enough time in this podcast for me to tell you about that, but that's the beginning of being able to figure this out. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. But just do this. Watch what is going on. Watch how your neighbors talk about things. Listen to how you talk about things. Think about how you think about things. Think about what you think, and then think about where that came from. So I'm going to stop there for this podcast because I think maybe I'll do a whole other podcast about what I've done, and this is just what I've done to kind of cope with this because I've embraced modern technology because it amplifies me in ways that would have been impossible even 10 years ago or 5 years ago. So I'm really enthusiastic about it, and I'm enthusiastic about the future. But it's also because I've developed some coping mechanisms so that I'm not affected by all this persuasion. And I think it has really helped. And so I'll pass that on to people at some point. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 478 on media. We didn't really talk a lot. I guess we talk about media. I guess we did. We did talk a little bit about media. People say, what's that stuff that you talk about all the time that helps you exercise? It's called Hydrus, and it will make a difference in your daily practice, whether it is CrossFit or cycling or competitive sports. It will help you if you walk. It will help you if you run. Just about anything, Hydrus will make a huge difference. Check them out at HydrusPerformance.com. That's H-Y-D-R-U-S Performance.com. It will transform your physical practice, whatever that is, and it'll help your life. Check out their website and lots of information there about what Hydrus does and how it works and how to order it. And let me know because I like sharing those stories. And thanks, Hydrus, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. You've heard me talking about Brush Studio, and you've heard me talking about Brush Studio as it relates to corporate events. It's also great for showing your clients how much you appreciate them. Reach out to Brush Studio to find out how to schedule a client appreciation evening. It'll be great and tons of fun. 952-236-1700. 952-236-1700. Something completely different to show your clients how much you appreciate them. It's really unique. 952-236-1700, or check them out online at brushstudio.net. Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park. Pilots, if you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. If you click on the Alpha Systems banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com page, it takes you to their website, and there's all kinds of information there about what it does. It's FAA approved. Most pilots will tell you that they want to get there, but they also want to get there safely, and this is the system that helps you get there safely because it's so critical in your final approach and takeoffs and landings to know and have a physical indicator of your angle of attack. Alpha Systems started the angle of attack revolution. Check them out, alphasystems.com. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher.com, and also TuneIn. And thanks for listening on blogtalkradio.com, and for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. If you go to the BobDavisPodcast.com, you can also listen off of the page, right on the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. And I appreciate that as well. If you click on the Facebook icon on the BobDavisPodcast.com page, it takes you to the podcast page. A lot of people are trying to find my Facebook page and they end up with my friends page, and I prefer people go to the show page. And thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show on AM 1280 The Patriot at 5 p.m. on Saturdays. That's starting to grow. You can also listen to that at gcnlive.com. And again, thanks for your donations at the BobDavisPodcast.com. And thanks for listening to podcast 478.